Well, this morning we're going to be in chapter 42 of Job. This is the chapter everybody's been waiting on, the last one. This has not been a real labor to me. It's been an enjoyment to go through this book. And see, when I teach, before I can teach you, I have to teach myself. If I'm not enlightened, I surely can't put a spark of fire in you, can I? So, I had to do a lot of things to go through this book. Had to relate to a lot of things and understand why God is doing what He's doing. He has a purpose. The world's not out of control. It's perfectly in God's control, just like our lives are. We know Job has been being rebuked by God, hasn't he? And now starting chapter 42, I'll read. Then Job answered the Lord and said, I know that you can do everything and that no thought can be withholden from you. Who is he that hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore have I uttered that I understood not things. I uttered that I understood not things too wonderful for me, which I knew not. Hear, I beseech thee, and I will speak. I will demand of thee, and declare you unto me. I have heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you. Wherefore I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. And it was so that after the Lord had spoken these words unto Job, the Lord said to Eliphaz the Temanite, My wrath is kindled against thee and against thy two friends, for you have not spoken of me the thing that is right as my servant Job has. Therefore take to you now 7 bullocks and 7 rams and go unto my servant Job and offer up for yourselves a burnt offering, and my servant Job shall pray for you. For him will I accept, lest I deal with you after your folly, in that you have not spoken of me the thing which is right, like my servant Job. So Eliphaz the Temanite, and Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite, went and did according as the Lord commanded them. The Lord also accepted Job. And the Lord turned the captivity of Job when he prayed for his friends. So also the Lord gave Job twice as much as he had before. Then came there unto him all his brethren and all of his sisters and all they that had been of his acquaintance before and did eat bread with him in his house. And they bemoaned him and comforted him over all the evil the Lord had brought upon him. Every man also gave him a piece of money and every one an earring of gold. So the Lord blessed the latter end of Job more than his beginning, for he had 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camel, and 1,000 yoke of oxen, and 1,000 she asses. He also had 7 sons and 3 daughters. And he came and he called the name of the first Jemiah, the name of the second Keziah, and the name of the third Kir-en-hap-puk, for better lack of speaking. And in all the land were no women found so fair as the daughters of Job. And their father gave them inheritance among their brethren. After this, Job lived 140 years and saw his sons and his sons' sons, even 4 generations. So Job died, being old and full of days. A very interesting book. We go back to the first verse again, and then Job responded to the Lord and said, literally Job, the hated and persecuted. Who would that be? It would be Christ and Christ within you. Jesus said, if they hate you, it's not you they're hating, but it's me in you. It's the Christ within us. He said, I know that you can do everything and that no thought or no purpose can be withheld from you. If I have a purpose, or if God has a purpose, who can withhold it? You can't stop God getting what he wants. It's only an illusion to think for one moment, and the church world teaches us to be that way, to think that we can control God like a genie in a bottle, just rub the bottle and he pops out and gives us what we want, and we poke him back in the bottle till we need him again. That's what the church teaches us. God's sitting there waiting to do our bidding. That's not true. We are his servants. Servants don't tell the master what to do. They serve. Okay, on to verse 3. Who is this that hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore have I uttered that I understood not things too wonderful or too difficult for me, which I knew not. You know what he's doing here? He's confessing how ignorant he's been. He's talking to God and saying, who is this that hides counsel or conceals counsel without knowledge. So he's saying, you know, you've got counsel, but you don't have any knowledge to go along with it. He said, I know I don't have it. I was just talking words. He realized how vain his words had been. Therefore, I have uttered that I understood not. He said, I was talking about things I didn't have a clue what I was talking about. We have all been guilty of this, haven't we? And the church world is guilty of it constantly. They're talking about things they have no idea what they're talking about, but they have not yet been dealt with God. They've never come to the understanding of judgment and chastisement and correction of the Lord. He said, things too wonderful or too difficult for me, which I knew not. And he goes on and says, hear now, and I will speak. This is God saying, I will demand of you, or I will inquire of you, and declare, and I will declare of you to know, to declare me, or to know me. I will declare, let me say it again, hear with the intent to respond, it's the word shama for the word hear, now, hear now, and I will speak. I will inquire of you to know me. Okay, to know me. What's that mean to you? He's saying, listen to me, I'm wanting to hear you now, and I will speak. When I hear you, I'll speak, and I will inquire of you so that I can know you. It's common union or communion. He said, I'm wanting to get to know you. How do you get to know somebody? By talking to them. Sit down and talk to someone for a while. Take the time, like the lady I talked to the other night for an hour on the phone. Isn't that Norma? Huh? Listen. By listening to what they say and what they don't say. See, it's a two-sided thing here. Listen, speak both ways. But you got to listen. And not just listen and look for an opportunity to speak back to the person, but listen to what they say. Most people listen to what you say only looking for an opportunity to interject what their thought is. And they're not thinking or listening to what you're saying. They're looking for a chance to put their words in there. See, if you don't listen to what someone says, you don't have a clue what they're talking about. You'll never know them. So we have to really slow down and listen to what God says to us before we make a response. We have a conception in this world today, if someone asks you a question, you've got to give an immediate response, don't they? You don't have to, do you? Is there any rule that says you must respond instantly whenever someone asks you a question? It would be better to be swift to hear and slow to speak, according to the book, right? So when someone asks you a question, you don't have to give an instant response. You should probably think about it a little bit. You'd probably get closer to getting the right answer, wouldn't you? So don't be too quick to speak. He said, I've heard of you. This is Job saying, I have heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you. Where do you think he saw God? In himself? Absolutely. Absolutely. He began to see the God manifested in him. He saw the error of his way because he saw the truth of the way. If you can't just see truth and say, okay, I got to figure it out if I haven't seen the error of my way. When King David walked the earth, how many mistakes did he make? And he was a man after God's own heart. When Solomon walked, how many mistakes did he make? He's the man that says the book says was the smartest man that ever walked. He made all kinds of mistakes, but he learned from it. It's what the whole book of Ecclesiastes is telling us. He said, I tried it all and found out it's all vanity. But knowing God is the greatest thing there is. He said, therefore, or wherefore, I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. He said, I abhor myself. Why? He saw not just the skin and on his bones. That's not what he's talking about. It's all about the thinking. He saw that his thinking process was wrong. You hear what I'm saying? He saw that his thought process was self-centered, humanistic in view, had nothing to do with God. God was an afterthought in the humanistic view. But he saw that his thinking process was really messed up. And guess what? So was ours. Until we see him, ours is messed up. We have to realize that. We have to abhor the way we think, the logic and the reasoning. Just like we talked about judgments earlier. Judgment is not necessarily a bad thing. It's a very good thing. Sometimes even the negative of judgment is a good thing. It'll correct, won't it? that we have to learn that when God's talking to judgment, it's not always in a negative way. Sometimes it's positive. And when Jesus gave his judgment upon the whole world, what was it? Because the book says in John chapter 5, the Father judges no man, but all judgment is given unto who? The Son. And Jesus, hanging on the cross, gave his judgment to his Father. Father, forgive them. Not guilty. Acquitted. Hear me? That's what we have to realize. And he saw these things in himself because he saw God. His eyes was opened. And it was so that after the Lord had spoken, okay, those words to Job, the Lord said to Eliphaz. Now Eliphaz is the one, his name means my God is gold. So wealth was what it was all about. Just a natural man, worried about making money. The Temanite, and Temanite speaks of the south or comfort, and Edomite. Edomite's an Adamite. It's a dust man. It's just all about the natural man. He said to him and said, my wrath is kindled against you and against your two friends. Now, boy, that ought to be something to wake you up. God spoke to you and said, I'm pretty upset with you. What would that do to you? Boy, that's a tough one. He said, because you have not spoken at this time of me the thing that is right as my servant Job has. Now, see, Job spoke some wrong things all through this book, didn't he? He spoke some things that was incorrect. But guess what he just did a few verses prior to this? He just repented. He said, I repented in dust and ashes in verse 6. Speaking of humility, he said, I realize now I've been humbled down. I realize how little I understood, how ignorant I was. And we all have to come to a place where we say, my God, I was ignorant. I was blind, but now I'm beginning to see. And when you begin to see, just like a little baby, they can't see clearly when they're first born, can they? It takes a process to where they get to learn to focus their eyes and begin to see and get the light. Okay? It takes time. It's the same in our life. Even though we begin to see, and that's what Job is doing here. He's beginning to see. After all these experiences, now he understands why God put him through all this experience. In verse 8, he goes on telling Eliphaz, he says, therefore, or at this time, take to you now 7 bullocks and 7 rams. What would that be speaking to you? The perfect sacrifice, 7 being perfect, but the perfect sacrifice is the beast. What perfect beast is there? It's your flesh, you know. And he did it for us, didn't he? This was still under the law. This is just something, a shadow of what was going to come. The perfect sacrifice was who? The little lamb? That perfect little lamb that was sacrificed? And go to my servant Job. Correct? God's pointed out their error, hasn't he? Would you say God pointed out their error there? Okay. Now, he said once he pointed out their error, he told them how to reconcile it, didn't he? Take a sacrifice and go where? Where did he tell them to go? Now, Revelation 3:9 says, behold, I will make the ones of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews and are not, but do lie, behold, I will make them come and worship before your feet or at your feet, and to know that I love you. Because you have kept the word of my patience, I also keep you from the hour of temptation, which shall come upon all the world to try them that dwell in the earth. Right there is Revelation being talked about right in Job. Okay. And offer up for a burnt offering. The word yourselves is an added word there. Shouldn't be in there. And offer up a burnt offering, offer up for a burnt offering, and my servant Job shall pray for you. Offer up a burnt offering for, the word yourself isn't there. What's he telling him to offer up? The sacrifice. What's the sacrifice? Okay, but what flesh are we talking about? Remember what I said, the little lamb, the perfect lamb. What is that? The Christ. And my servant shall pray for you. And Job was also a type of who? Christ, which we are also, because him will I accept, lest I deal with you in what? After your foolishness, the word folly should be foolishness, because you have not spoken to me the thing which is, or the right things, like my servant Job. You've not spoke the right things to me. Now I'm sure they went in there and offered their sacrifices, his servants, because they thought they were doing it right under the law. I'm sure they'd done some of those things. the traditions of men. You come to the altar up here and you bow down and you cry and say, I'm sorry, and ask Jesus to forgive you, and it's done. That's not what is right. That's not what is right. What is right is the attitude of your heart changing to where you have forgiveness and mercy and long-suffering and grace and peace and joy in your heart. Not doing those things so I can go back and be the same vile person I was before I started. It's not about acting nice while you're in a fellowship with someone, but it's a lifestyle 24 hours a day. And the only way you'll change this, it says in Matthew 24, if possible, even the very elect should be saved. If possible. And I asked God, I said, okay, how can I make sure that I'm not one of those deceived? And the answer was, know my word. Just three words. If I know his word, can I be deceived? You can't be either. That's why I encourage people to know what this book says. You don't have to worry about someone deceiving you if you know the truth. Can darkness overtake the light? It can't happen. It's impossible. You can't stop the light, which Christ is. He's the light. And the book says he's the light that lights every man that comes into the world. Who would that leave out? See? Who's that? Who you leave out? Nobody. He said, I'm going to light every man that comes into this world. His goal isn't to lose any. It's all. He's going to get them all. Verse 9. So Eliphaz, that's the gold man. You know, he's worshiping wealth. The Temanite, which speaks of comfort. And Bildad. Bildad is a confused love. The Shuhite, speaking of wealth again. In the first two realms, it's all about money. Passover and Pentecost, it's about money. In a Pentecostal realm, it's a confused love. I love you if you love me. That's not what it's about. Love is unconditional. God's love doesn't come because you love him. It comes because he loves you before you were ever created. He loved you. He created you because he loved you. And Zophar, which means departing early. The Naamathite, which means pleasantness. They like comfort. Okay? And did what the Lord spoke to them, and the Lord also exalted Job. Not accepted, but he exalted Job. Doesn't the book say if you exalt yourself, he'll exalt you, he'll debase you, and if you debase yourself, he will exalt you? Which way you think we should have it? You exalt yourself, he'll take you back down. If you go down to the bottom and start from the bottom like you're supposed to and work your way up like he wants you to, guess what? You'll be up there the way it should be. Just let him have his way. And the Lord turned the captivity of Job. The word turned is incorrect. It should say reversed or revoked the captivity of Job. Job was in captivity. Was he literally in a prison? What do you think he's talking about? The way he thought had him in captivity. And see, we all have lived in those dungeons of the earth, right in here. We've all lived in those dungeons. We were in captivity to what we thought. How many of us, how many listening to my voice has not thought, I'm on my way to hell. I've been so bad, there's no hope for me. See? We've all lived and existed in that place because of what we were told. We were in captivity. And man and religion put us in that captivity. That's the reason Jesus came back, to set captivity free. Come on, that's what the book says. He come to take captivity captive and bring us back to the Father. In Christ, it says there is liberty. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty, not captivity. The church has got it all wrong. So anyway, he reversed the captivity, or revoked it, when he prayed for his friends. Now, how did he get it reversed? He forgave. He took his eyes off of his problems and saw through the eyes of God the condition of his friends, of the fellow humanity. And when you see that fellow humanity, how bad a shape they're in, he wept over Jerusalem. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how many times I would have ministered to you and you would not let me. When you look and see it, how sad they are. They look at us and say, oh, it's pitiful, we're such a mess. But they're the ones that's the mess. They don't even know what life is about yet. And they have no forgiveness. All they have is revenge and retaliation. But when he gave up and forgave and prayed for his friends as the Lord instructed him. Now, do you think God has to come to you and tell you to pray for somebody? Here's the thing. When you have this heart transplant that Ezekiel talked about, he said, I'm going to take your old heart out, the hard one, and give you a new soft heart. That's the mind of Christ. That's the mind of the Father. When that thing is implanted in your spirit, the mind and the way that God works, how could you do anything but pray for him? See, there's no option in this thing. It's not, can I think of something to pray for? My nature is to be concerned and think about other people more than myself. Do you hear what I'm saying? That's the nature of God. Think about other people more than yourself. You're not here to take, you're here to give. I'm trying to help somebody. See? And as soon as he realized this, God turned his captivity and when he prayed for his friends. And the Lord gave Job twice as much as he had before. He had the double portion. Set everybody free. And again, the Old Testament type and shadow of reconciliation is Jubilee. It's like Lois said there. Jubilee is the 50th year, everything goes back to where it was from the beginning. If you had a farm and you gambled it away, in 50 years, they had to give it back to you. If you sold it in 50 years, they had to give it back to you. Everything come back. It's a type of reconciliation, everything being reconciled back to God. Okay? Then came there unto him all his brethren and all of his sisters and all they that had been of his acquaintance before, okay, or in his presence before, and did eat bread with him. That's speaking of their having intimacy. That's all becoming one in what? In God. We're all becoming one. And they eat bread in his house, and they bemoaned, or literally what? Consoled him. They consoled him and comforted him concerning all the evil that the Lord had brought upon him. How many people believe that? They consoled him. Do you think he needed consoled? Well, they were still elevating him as a person. Do you think, it says Jesus, for the joy that was set before him, endured the suffering of the cross. I don't think Job looked at it that way. I mean, it looked at the way of being negative, that, oh, poor me, or woe me, look how much I've went through. I don't think he needed the consoling, okay? They might have done it, but I don't think he needed it. And they comforted him over all the evil the Lord had brought upon him. And every man gave, right? And what's that word mean? Not gave, but ascribed to him, it says, ascribed to him a piece of money. And this piece of money, you know what it literally means? I'm going to write on the board up here so you can see it. This piece of money means this. What's that? Silver. Redemption. Silver represents redemption. So everybody ascribed redemption, not money, not literally silver, but symbolically, the redemption. Who is redemption ascribed to? Christ. And that's what we're speaking of him as, the type of Christ. So everyone ascribed to him this piece of money or redemption, and everyone an earring of God, of gold, right? What does the earring represent? Hearing of gold, the ability to hear God. So they ascribed to Christ the ability to what? Hear God. The gold represents the nature of God. So it said an earring or the hearing of God. I was aiming to put a couple of verses in here a minute ago, back in the 11th verse, where it said, and they covered him over all the evil the Lord had brought upon him. And I just realized I'd left something out there stuck in my mind. I'm still there. Okay. In Isaiah 45:7, and Amos 3 and 6 are two verses to verify that God does these things. Okay, I'm going to turn there right now and read them. Okay, Isaiah 45:7. He said, read 6 along with it. Or I'll start in verse 5, the context. I am the Lord, there is none else. There is no God besides me. I girded you, though you have not known me, that they may know from the rising of the sun from the west that there is none besides me. I am the Lord, and there is none else. I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. Church world don't want to believe that. He created all. And Amos and 6. if you read the first five verses, or six verses, it really tells you the whole thing. I'm going to read the first five, six verses. Hear the word of the Lord. Hear this word of the Lord that has spoken against you, O children of Israel, against the whole family which I brought up from the land of Egypt, saying, you only have I known of all the families of the earth. Therefore I will punish you for all your iniquities. Can two walk together except they be agreed? Will a lion roar in the forest when they have no prey? Will a young lion cry out of his den if he has taken nothing? Can a bird fall in a snare upon the earth where there no gin is for him or no snare? Shall one be taken up in a snare from the earth and have from the earth and have taken nothing at all? Shall a trumpet be blown in the city and the people not be afraid? Shall there be evil in a city and the Lord has not done it? Who did it? God. Surely God will do nothing except he reveal it to his secrets to his servants the prophets. Okay? I wanted to put that back in there just to say there was two references that God does bring evil. He creates it for a purpose. Okay? On to verse 12. So the Lord blessed the latter end of Job more than his beginning, because he had 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camels, and 1,000 yoke of oxen, and 1,000 she asses. If you go back to the first verse, you'll find out he had exactly half of what he says right there. Okay? He also had 7 sons and 3 daughters. Okay? He had 3 daughters. Now, he called the name, and those 3 daughters, what do you think they are? What do you represent? 3 realms you walk. But I'm seeing the 7 sons, the perfection of these 3. That 7 being the perfection of these 3 daughters. And that would encompass all, wouldn't it? It's reconciliation. And he called the name of the first Jemima. Jemima? Okay, Jemima, okay. You know what it means? Dove. It means dove. Warm or affectionate. I see that as the first realm of God. When we first come to even in the understanding of God, the first realms we have with God seem to be very warm, very affectionate, doesn't it? I see that as our Passover experience. The name of the second, Keziah, or Zia, or whatever, however you say it, her name means spice. And that's when God begins to add things to us in the Pentecostal realm. We begin to add things to us to stretch us out a little bit further than what we were in Passover. And the third was Ker-en-hap-puk. That's a heck of a name. But it's called Karen, yeah. Well, Karen, her name means silver white. That's the one that's something we're seeing. That's the Ruth in the book of Ruth. Orpah, Naomi, and Ruth, third woman. Okay? Silver white. Silver speaks of redeemed, doesn't it? And white, the redeemed and the righteous. He sees her as the redeemed and righteous one. Correct? Well, it goes along with it. If you're redeemed and righteous, I'd say you'd probably be up there, wouldn't you? In all the land, there was no woman so beautiful as the daughters of Job. And their father gave them inheritance, not among, but in the midst or in the very center of their brethren. In the midst of their brethren. You know, that went against the culture. Naming the daughters, the sons wasn't even named there. There was no name on them. It was all the daughters. And the daughters got the inheritance. Women didn't get an inheritance back then. They were the inheritance. They were part of the property. They brought forth the seed. And seed produces like kind. These 3 daughters will produce those 3 seed right there. And after this, Job lived 140 years. Now, there's something in 140 years. Again, in Scripture, numbers are as symbolic as every other word. In the numbers, a lot of times we do what's called factoring. Okay? In there, you could do several things. If you look at this number I wrote on the board, we can remove that and go with that part of it, 14. Can't hear you. 140, and I take away the 0 and give you 14. That's the major number in it. Okay? And the major number 14, what does it represent? Passover. Represents a starting place. We start where? In our Passover experience with God. In 14. Yep, we go right back and start from our origin with God in our Passover experience. And he saw his sons and his grandchildren even to 4 generations. Now, what does the number four mean? He saw all of his generations. He saw some. And just like Job saw here, he saw all of his generations coming in symbolism. He saw all of it throughout time. Remember when Abraham was in the desert taking his journey, and God told him to walk how many days? 3 days. And he'd walk 3 days in the wilderness, and he lift his eyes and saw afar off, and what did he see? He saw the crucifixion of Christ. See, he lift his eyes and saw afar off. And just like right here, Abraham saw into the future and saw all of his generations. He saw reconciliation. I'm sorry. They're both the same person, so I understand them being the same person. But when Job looked afar off, he saw all of his generations being reconciled back to God, that no one was left out. Reckon that'd make you a happy person? Huh? Very much at peace. So Job died being old and full of days, literally full of life. He died being full of life. His flesh died, but what was he full of? He was full of Christ. And you know the words that ring in my spirit when I hear that right there? He died being old and full of days, or full of life. It's finished. Jesus gave up the ghost. He died on the cross. Was he finished there? He finished with his labors, but his life began there. That was the beginning of the rest of his life. And that's with him, the beginning of the rest of his life. With us, it's the same thing. It's the beginning of the rest of our life when we come to this place. When we fulfill everything the flesh has for us, then now we actually begin the true life. Just as he saw his seed before him, he endured the suffering of the cross. Beautiful, beautiful pictures.